Hey, everybody, J.J. Cooper, Ian Kundle, and soon to join us, Jeff Ponce on the Baseball America Prospect Podcast. We are excited to join today and talk all about kind of things that have been going on this April. We're going to talk about Frank Linares. We're going to talk about Seth Fernandez, Cade Anderson, Anthony Ionson, and then a little bit also about maybe a new little trend happening in the major leagues. Jeff will be joining us. He's actually recording another podcast, but we're stacked up like we're at O'Hare and it's a stormy 6 o'clock evening. And we're going to slot him in as we can because we're going to record the hot sheet show soon. So we got to get this rolling. So Ian, but most importantly, I wanted to kind of start with you anyway here. Great to have you on the Prospect Pod, but most importantly, we love when we have people bouncing around and seeing things that are outside of their normal, you know, geographical area. And you've been checking out the Cal League.
Yeah, it's first time ever out here watching baseball. Obviously, been out here multiple times before, but it's been a very fun experience because it is so different than what I'm used to. Obviously, in the Northeast, I'm mostly exposed to Double A and Triple A. You know, I'll venture down south to go see some High A and Low A occasionally, but the Cal League is a different animal
than Double A.
Yeah. Yes, I would say so. I had a nice, it was generous official score, but we could have had probably about a 14 error game a couple nights ago, which was something. But yeah, it's been a really fun series so far. Going to get another one in another week. But I got the Dodgers and the Giants, the way affiliates, and I got to say, some talent on display in those games. Obviously, the Giants have top 100 prospect Johnny Lavelle. By the way, I learned that
Lavelle.
Johnny Lavelle, who had probably the moment of the series when he leads off the game against Blake Snell rehabbing because the Dodgers were in town playing the Giants. So they sent Snell down to rehab and he goes up there and what does he do? You know, you think maybe he takes a pitch. It's an MLB pitcher, you know, kind of get a feel for it. No. You throw a 95 mile per hour fastball. I'm hacking right away. Line drive single, just really nice swing. We're going to talk more about Lavelle probably next week, but I've been really impressed with what I've seen from him at the plate. And then the Dodgers team, this team is, I don't know how they do it. You know, this is a team that has very limited restrictions in the draft. But time and time again, they got to just find these guys. And you look up and down their lineup, there's some big international signings, Emil Morales, Joandrey Vargas, and Chengshen Ko. And then you also have Chase Harlan, Jaron Elkins, you know, some other draft guys. They got arms left and right, just throwing 97. Dylan Smith, who was, I guess, he was a third-round pick a couple years ago. Sahyun Suk Jang, another big international signing. Like, there's a ton of talent on display, and it's been a really fun look. Just a very different brand of baseball that I've been watching so far this year. So it's been a lot of fun.
So you've been seeing that, but we're also now, we're starting to edge into that wonderful time where we stop using what we've been doing on the Prospect Pod every week, I feel like, which is like, it's too soon. It's too soon. We don't want to overreact. It's too soon. We're now into, okay, we have a top 100 update we will roll out next Wednesday as we record this. You see this, like, I mean by that, what date is that? It's going to be May.
May 4th, I think, right?
May 6th. So that will be the new, like, that's the Wednesday. So May 6th, I believe it is. And don't hold me to that. But I believe it's May 6th that we'll run an updated top 100. And we do mean an actual update, right? We did one at the end of spring training, but we were really trying to be careful. We don't want to overreact. Well, now it's time to react. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, the first thing that we're going to jump into this is I'll ask you, Ian, is Frank Linares, the Red Sox shortstop, is he making the leap? And I say that, let's preface by saying, I understand if you're listening to this, if you're watching this and going, what do you mean making the leap? He made the leap last year. He was excellent last year. He's firmly, not just firmly, but he's very, you know, he's well up on the top 100 right now. But what I mean is now it feels like the Arias might be moving into that range of, hey, he's actually now in that utter elite group of the top prospects in the minor leagues. Are we overreacting right now by saying that, or is that now look more possible than it did 2 months ago?
No, I think we're reacting exactly how we should be because Arias has done, and you know, coming into the season, I think Arias has been kind of a polarizing prospect because on the one hand, he does some things very well. He's a very good defender. His bat to ball skills are really strong. But on the other hand, the power's just never really shown up in game and he's pretty aggressive at the plate, has a tendency to chase and just kind of get himself out by swinging at pitches early in counts. And he also is a below average runner, which is just weird given he's a good athlete. He's got good instincts in the field, but just was a very unique profile. And Arias this offseason, him and the Red Sox player dev staff deserve a ton of credit. He gained 10 pounds, around 10, 15 pounds of muscle. And he's added over, I think, around 2 miles an hour of bat speed. And the result is he is currently in, I think it's still the case, leading the Eastern League in the triple. Oh, nope. He was passed by Sean Keyes. But he is third in the league in home runs with 7. For reference, his career high in home runs is 8. Career high.
He's going to get that.
Yes. He is leading the league in hitting at 407. Or excuse me, second in the league in hitting at 407. And he is second in the league. Fourth in the league.
Fifth in on base 476. And yeah. First in slugging at 870. And first in OPS 1346. Yeah. And also, like, he is third in total bases. Just a... And by the way, younger than everyone else we're talking about here also.
Yes. And I think the thing that's really impressive with Arias is when you dig into the underlying data is it just really backs up what he's doing. His EVs are up considerably. His average EV has jumped. It's around 95 miles an hour now. Before it was around 88. And he's doing this while he's cut his chase rate. He's making better swing decisions. And I think that's kind of the secret here is that obviously he's transformed his swing. He's out of bat speed. He's gotten stronger, but he's just swinging at better pitches. He used to just, because his bat control was so good, he could swing at a pitch 6 inches off the plate and make contact with it, except you're not going to do any damage against that pitch. Now that he's being more selective and waiting for pitches he can actually drive, it's allowing him to tap into that bat speed, that additional power. And now, you know, it's translating to higher EVs as well.
You've got the two parts of it there, right? Which is if you're making better swing decisions, hitting better pitches, and doing that while you actually have the ability to do more damage when you do. Hard to have a better combo pack than that. Like, that's, sign me up for that, which is because, again, as you said, and we're talking about here, a guy doing this who also is an honest to goodness shortstop, like, solid, you know, defender. Like, this is a guy who's going to provide defensive impact and now offensive impact as well. Look, I will say, you know, feel like we also need to acknowledge the elephant in the room, which is like, not a great week for the Red Sox, you know, even no. With this. We're not like doing this to be like, hey, great week for the Red Sox. Franklin Arias is making a step forward. It's like, this is like, you know, there's this raging forest fire going on at the big league level. And there's this, you know, there's some good news happening here at the minor league level as well. But it is something, again, we're a prospect podcast. This is one of the guys we've written about him already this year. You've written about him, that this is a guy who is seemingly taking a step forward. The thing about this also, though, is again, we are early. We want to see him maintain this, but it feels like that the attributes we're talking about, these skills, because these are more skilled, but bat speed's a tool. Mm-hmm. Plate discipline's a skill. The tools and the skills that he is improving so far, though, are things that often can be pretty sticky, right? Bat speed improvements by themselves, they can be a little bit of a false positive sometimes, right? Because if you improve your bat speed, but you do so in a way that you've changed your swing in a way that basically has made you like, okay, you're just trying to get your A swing off every time you're up there, no matter what the count, no matter what the situation. Well, okay, great. You're swinging the bat harder when you miss. But when you combine that you're swinging the bat harder, you're hitting the ball harder, and you're actually swinging at better pitches, well, then you've kind of got the symbiotic relationship going here. This feels like, that's why I kind of phrased it as, is he making the leap? You throw all this together, all of a sudden, there aren't a whole lot of more intriguing prospects, position prospects in the minors, I would say.
No, I agree. And it's it too. And I left a part out. The angles are way better too this year. His launch angle is increased dramatically. He's barreling the ball at the highest rate of his career. I mean, he's got, you know, kind of the three pillars of hitting all together, and he's improved all of them in one season. And yeah, and I had a really good question actually in the Hot Sheet chat yesterday was, you know, who is a player that you think is making the biggest jump in the top 100? And I think there's different levels of jump. You know, a guy jumping from 100 to 50 is not as impressive to me as someone who jumps from 45 to 20. Or something like that.
100%.
The numbering is obviously, it's higher for the first one, but in terms of overall impact and making the jump, I think the second one is more impactful. And I think that's what we're seeing with Arias. You know, this is a guy that we currently have just inside the top 50, but
he's 46 right now. And when we update top this
20,
yeah, probably.
Like, because it's and this is the biggest thing with him is he has the high floor with the defense. That's kind of the known entity with him. That's been what it been it all the way up through the minors. That's been the case with him. Now he's added the offensive impact. And, you know, you're going from a guy who maybe you're looking at an above average to plus defender who is, you know, 275 hitter, you know, plus hitter to 280 and 8 to 10 home runs. And now we're talking about, you know, the EVs are more like 15 to 20 home runs. With that defense, that's a, you know, that's a fringe all-star right there. So yeah, I think the ceiling has been raised with him too. And that's why he's moved up that tier. And I think when we do the regrades, he's going to jump from his adjusted grade is going to jump into a higher tier because of that, because the ceiling has just changed with him based on the changes he's made at the plate.
So that's to me kind of one of the things that we're looking for is the guys who, again, we're not just looking for, oh, who's had a hot start, right? There are guys who've had hot starts and you're like, nothing's really changed there. Great. And there's guys, the flip side of that, there's guys who are off to terrible starts. So you look at it, you say, okay, underlying numbers, underlying metrics here, this probably isn't anything more than, you know, guys not having a great start to the season. And again, there's also the other components that sometimes we hear about, sometimes we don't. Like a guy's got a finger injury that we don't know about, and actually he's not swinging the bat like he normally can, or there's a variety of things going on. But when you see something like we've seen with Arias so far, we do want to highlight that. We do want to bring that to attention. But speaking of that, when we come back from this break, we're going to dive into some pitchers who we just got to ask, are they going to be moving up pretty soon? Because these are some pitching prospects who, so far, the results are very, very good. We'll be talking about that right after this quick break.
Todd, Father, it's getting a little warm out. That means let's hit some concerts. Let's hit some baseball games. And where am I going to go to find those tickets? And if you want to sing the answer, you can.
We're going to see Geek. Hey. Okay. Listen, ultimately, at the end of the day, it is getting warmer and people want to leave the house. And it's time to leave. Go see a ball game. I guess where you can find the best tickets, best spots, best places to go. SeatGeek's got it all, man. They got their red and their green signs letting you know what's good and bad, all that good kind of stuff. They make it really simple for you at the end of the day. For a guy like me who's running around, I just need 5 minutes, bing, bang, boom, I got my seats.
Yeah, each ticket's rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. And, of course, the code for you, Territory10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code Territory10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and then have the code automatically added to your account so that you can use it later. Thank you to SeatGeek, MLB's official ticket marketplace.
So, Ian, if we said who's the pitcher who stands out as maybe he's just too good for the level that he's at? The great thing about this is, if I just threw that out to you, I think that there's three elite pitching prospects, one of whom's not on the top 100, but will be, I think, when we update next week. But three pitchers who you could kind of say, choose which one you want. But let's just be honest, at the start of the day, at the end of the day, the pitcher who I think jumps out to us the most as far as he's just toying with the bat, the level he's at, is the Pirate Seth Fernandez. When you look at what Seth Fernandez is doing at low A Bradenton, I have a piece that went up today at Baseball America about, or sorry, yesterday when you see this, check it out, baseballamerica.com, about how if you look at Seth Fernandez's start, and again, there's always arbitrary endpoints on this, but I didn't try to slice it at exactly what Seth Fernandez has done. But I said, okay, pro debut, full season ball, fewer than 5 hits, 15 innings, and I think it was 25 strikeouts and one or fewer runs. There's been three guys who've done that since 2007. We've got Max Scherzer. We've got Dylan Bundy, who, if you weren't around at the time, everyone, what Dylan Bundy started at, like, I know, you know, we can look at his career in the big leagues and go, oh, what could have been and all that. But Dylan Bundy didn't give up a hit till his, I think, 5th start of his pro career. And now we have Seth Fernandez. When you watch Seth Fernandez, what comes to mind? What stands out to you?
Well, I think the Max Clark gift from spring training is what comes to mind, because it's insane the stuff he has. And the thing that really stands out to me is his physicality. You know, this is a guy who was in high school last year and just doesn't look that like that at all. If you told me he was a college junior, you know, I would believe that because he's just, he's not built like a high schooler. And I get he's older for his grade. You know, he's 19. He turns turns 20 in June. But it's that, and then it's the polish he has with his secondary pitches. He throws 102, but that's not his best attribute. His best attribute is his secondary pitches, and his ability to miss bats with them is just unparalleled right now. And I mean, one of the crazy stats that we were digging into before the show is that he has not given up a hit this year to six spots in the batting order. The only people who have a hit against him are the 1, 2, and 4 hitters. And it's not just that. JJ, we watched the hits. Only two of them are real hits. Two of them are ground balls, right?
Four hits in four starts, four hits. One of them is a ground ball over the third base bag. The third baseman comes in. I'm not saying it had been an easy play, but the third baseman just whiffs. Like the ball goes under his glove, rolls into short, you know, left field, and ends up being a single and an error to get him to second, right? Okay. That's not really a hit. There's another where a rather large and hulking first baseman hits a ground ball that the shortstop fields and can't get it out of his glove. And so, again, it was shortstop's going to his left pretty far. Wasn't an easy play. They rule it a hit. And you're like, okay, that could be a hit. But at the same time, it was an infield, could have been an out. And then there was a triple that hit the warning track. First batter he faced all year, Blaine Bullard. That's a legit triple, and then there's a line drive in front of the center fielder. Again, a second ball that was an actual hit. But that's it. We have four starts for Seth Fernandez, and those are the four hits, and you could really say two of them. The thing that stands out to me as well on this is when you watch, hitters just are not pulling his fastball. They are making contact. It is not a swinging under it over and over kind of pitch, but it still is the foundation of everything he does because it's 98, 99, he's touched 100, and they can't get around on it, which just makes everything else play better, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it allows everything to play up. And I mean, you're talking about the whiff rate. His whiff rate on his fastball is just over 20%. On all of his secondary pitches, the lowest one is 65%. And so, yeah, I mean, they just can't touch his secondary because they have to gear up for his fastball. And I think that's what makes him such a unique case is that even though he's a high school guy and we don't usually advocate for high school guys to be promoted this quickly, he's not really being challenged right now because he can just go in there and he knows that, hey, I'll throw some fastballs, locate them occasionally. And then guys are going to be so geared up for it. I'll just throw a curveball or a changeup and they have no chance of touching it. And that's not something I don't think is going to improve, especially as we start getting the hitter promotions like we've seen from the FSL. So yeah, I think that, it's kind of crazy to think about it, but as a high schooler, he's probably too advanced for low A already.
And that's not a shock. We promised that Jeff was joining us, and here Jeff is. And so I'll loop you because we were talking about basically like, I don't want to make it sound like it's crazy that the Pirates haven't promoted him. Having a player spend a month, you know, like Dylan Bundy did this, and then there was like seven starts, and then they moved him up. But with Seth Fernandez, you've watched it as well. I just feel like that we are already hitting the point of diminishing returns about whether Seth Fernandez is really, there's much more that he can learn in the Florida State League environment.
I mean, we've seen Riley Quick get promoted out of that league as a college pitcher, and Hernandez against the same competition has put up even better numbers. You know, it's a 51.7% K rate. It's a 51.9% whiff rate. He just misses tons of bats. The arsenal itself is really impressive and I think still projectable. Like we talked about that, I think this last week or the week before, there's still places that this fastball can kind of go in terms of getting more of a defined four seam. And then maybe, you know, a sinker shape mixed in there as well.
We're all like, I can't wait till the sinker becomes part of this.
Yeah.
Because it just is so, and I'm not fault again, like steps. You don't have to throw the whole kitchen sink at it one time. But when you watch it, it's like when he starts adding that in and probably eventually, whether it's a gyro or it's a cutter or whatever, and he has kind of that fastball triangle going on.
Yeah.
Watch out.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. And you know, I think he definitely could probably throw a cutter. I mean, we'll see what he adds to his repertoire here. But he throws a gyro slider at 88, 89, 90 miles an hour already. The power on his arsenal, and there's feel for spin. Like, he throws his slider that hard and has sort of like tighter spin on it. And it's a high spin rate too. Like, there's places for him to go. Like, he has the ability to pronate and supinate pretty well. He kind of spins everything. Like, it's more of a supination dominant profile, but he does get behind the ball and ride it pretty well. There's probably more of like a true cut four seam fastball shape here where he probably doesn't give up much velocity to do that either. It's just a really interesting mix, and he's a great athlete on top of it. He moves really well on the mound. You know, he gets down the mound well, in addition to all that. So he just has like all of these traits and characteristics that I think you can look at him and really kind of project long term, that this is going to go good and, you know, is going to be, you know, potentially a frontline starter. I think it's always hard to project pitching prospects to exact roles, but I think he's like baseline, kind of like an excellent mid rotation guy, but the sky is the limit in terms of what the upside is. This could be a number one.
I'll go a step further. Like, yes, we're not saying he will be a number one, but if you can't like, but so, if there are guys who are going to become number ones, not all number guys you project could be a number one, become number ones, but it's hard to think of a whole lot of guys like, okay, this is a good transition for this, right? Kate Anderson's been great at Double-A. Kate Anderson, absolutely, like when we talk about guys who might need to move up, might need to move up Triple-A. But if you ask me right now, could Kate Anderson be a one versus could Seth Hernandez be a number one? It's not a question in my mind right now, because the quality of the stuff is just at a different level. But Ian, when we look at Kate Anderson, the Mariners lefty, their first round pick in last year's draft, when you see him, like, is he kind of running out of things? Texas League is not a conservative assignment to send a guy out. That's like a, whoa, he's already in Double A basically for the start of his first full pro year. And again, I would say with him, there's a little bit more likelihood that maybe he is going to hit a little bit of a bump. Texas League can be a more difficult place. But what have you seen so far with Kate?
I think the thing that's really stood out is his control. And that was something we highlighted in the Mariners org report, or the offseason handbook, was he was best control in the system and he had never played in the system. And once he gone out and done it in the Texas League, he has 4 walks so far in 18 and 2/3 innings, 30 strikeouts. He's only given up 9 hits. And yeah, I think it's just, he's such a polished pitcher. And, you know, LSU obviously has a very strong track record, as we've seen with their ace starters have, they're pretty good. You know, Paul Skene's guy, he's pretty good. And yeah, I mean, I don't think Anderson at this point has the same upside that someone like Skene's obviously does. Very few do. Maybe the guy we talked about before does, but that might be the only one in the minors. But Anderson, it's just the polish really stands out, has complete command of his arsenal. He can hit his spots. And, you know, it's not an overwhelming fastball, but he's able to make it work. And then he's just got, you know, the curveball, the slider, a couple different shapes of secondaries that have been enough to, as you said, Texas League is not the easiest place to pitch, and he's had no issues with it so far.
Jeff, I want to kind of ask the same question. Like, we talk about LSU is a great place, you know, as far as developing pitchers. Anthony Ianson couldn't be their Friday starter last year because of this guy named Kate Anderson. But
and I'll bridge the two drafts and say you forgot Gage Jump was another guy that took a huge step last year and really kind of came into his own at LSU after being at UCLA. So there's a few.
But Ianson also, so we've kind of got this slotted. So we started with the high school pitchers at low A, and we're like, you know, I just don't know if low A is enough of a challenge for him. And then crazy enough, we've got the college pitcher who goes straight to Double A, and you're like, you know, I don't know if Double A is much of a challenge for him, which, by the way, is kind of something like shades of, again, he's not that level of pitching prospect, but shades of Paul Skene, who every outing he had in the minor leagues, it's like, what is he doing here? Anthony Ianson, we're kind of split in the middle here, but is he looking like he might be ready for Double A before long?
I hope so. I think me and I both hope so. Of course, you're on the West Coast now, like for a few weeks, but like, yeah,
he's the West Coast elite.
Please bring him to Portland now that it's going to warm up. And I think that maybe is part of it, right? Like, it is starting to become spring out here, and another week or two, you know, you'll get reasonable temperatures every day up there in Portland. There's no reason to rush these guys into cold environments in the early portion of the season, especially with sort of the enviable pitching depth the Red Sox have kind of built over this last stretch of years in that farm system. So, I mean, there's no reason to push him up just yet, but I wouldn't be shocked if 3 weeks from now, or maybe even 2 weeks from now, we're talking about a potential promotion up to Portland. He probably gets maybe another two starts there, gets, you know, above 20 innings. He's only had 16.2 so far this year. But it's been one of the more dominant stretches we've seen just from a K to BB sort of perspective to open a professional career, JJ. You know, this is kind of entering George.
It's a no BB.
Yeah.
No walks.
Because he hasn't had that's what I was going, guys. I was just saying that your research, it was setting you up. You foiled.
We wanted to make the transition.
But yeah, over four appearances now or four starts, you know, he's struck out 27. He hasn't walked a batter. He does have one hit by pitch. But you don't usually see guys come in and throw that many strikes, miss that many bats, and not give up hard contact consistently. So it was really pretty impressive.
The thing that stands out with that is like, we're also like, you both know now, and I know Jeff really knows, and Ian, you're kind of getting to where you know that I love strike percentage. I think that strike percentage is kind of underappreciated as far as the stat, because okay, like, there are guys whose walk rates go up, but then you see their strike percentage. If you're throwing strikes 66-67% of the time, I'm not really like, then walks are kind of an approach thing more than they are anything else, or they're a sequencing thing. That's the only thing it can be. Maybe it's something where you cannot finish and it's like you have a bazillion foul balls. There has to be something underlying. If you're not walking batters, but you have a 58-59% strike rate, you don't have control. You might be getting some chases. You might be getting, you know, like weak contact, whatever it is, but there's an underlying issue there that's going to eventually arise as you climb the ladder in the minors. These are guys who we're talking about, like in Cade Anderson's case, it's 69% strike percentage, which really is, that's almost at a level that's not sustainable in the long run. Like, you have to eventually, as you climb the ladder, be a little bit less in the zone, because at some point, but when you're at these numbers that we're talking about for all three of these guys, it really does jump out. And I did want to just kind of call up a camp. So yes, Anthony Ianson, one thing he really hasn't had to work on yet is his pitch selection in three ball counts, because so far in four starts, he's had 2-3-1 counts and he's had 3-3-2 counts. And if you say, well, what does he throw on 3-0? You don't have that on the scouting report yet. Why? He hasn't had a 3-0 pitch yet in four starts. Like, now at the same time, he's had 10-0-2 counts. So just thank you, Synergy Sports, as always. Like, just to give you an idea, that's where we're saying, like, that these guys, as it warms up, maybe it's time to maybe be looking at another level. But we're going to do it quick here because we're going to roll around to our next show before long. But before we do that, we're going to take one more break. And when we get back, we're going to ask, are we in a new age of the rookie lefty starter? Right after this quick break. So we're back. And I will just note, I got to change the setup there again, because I don't want to be covering up Ian's face there, but on the YouTube view. But we look right now, Peyton Tolley, as we are recording this, will be making the start tonight. But we've also seen Connelly Early make 6 effective starts. We've seen Parker Messick carry a perfect game late into a game and has been excellent for 6 starts. We've seen Noah Schultz come up and be very solid so far. Connor Prelip just kind of is up and was effective, very effective last night. And then we throw in, you know, Foster Griffin's a little bit of a different story, but another lefty rookie.
Yeah,
we should note as well. Ian, what is it? Are we seeing about lefty starters at the big league level right now? Is this a fluke? Is this a trend? Is there something here?
It's interesting, and I think Messick is one of the most interesting cases because he's actually second in baseball, tied for second in baseball in pitcher war, B war right now. And if you look, you know, he's not doing it with velocity. He's in the 30th percentile for velocity, averaging 93.3 on his fastball, but he's just got polished secondaries and he throws a ton of strikes, and that works. And maybe it's something to do with, you know, early in the season, it's, you know, pitcher's time right now. It's easier when the cold weather for them to get out. So maybe there is some small sample size noise here, but it's just interesting when you think about all these lefties coming up and then the righties, you know, the guys we are expecting big things out of so far. Nolan McLean, I think, he's been pretty good, but up and down. Treya Savage is, I believe, making his debut tonight. Bubba Chandler has, when he throws strikes, he's good, but he doesn't do that very often. Like, the righties are kind of having been a little more inconsistent. And yeah, these lefties are all just kind of carving along. And same thing with someone like Prelip. It's the secondary stuff that really stood out. And frankly, with Tolley, it's the same thing early. And I think it's just the polish with the secondaries has allowed them to really succeed. Because not all these guys, you know, Schultz obviously has a big fastball and Tolley does, but we're not talking about a bunch of, you know, guys sitting in the upper 90s from the left side here. You know, the velocity scale is a little different with lefties. It's a little lower. And so they're able to get by with more polish. And I think just if you can command your pitches and you're lefty with good shapes, then you can be successful in the majors, at least right now. We've seen that so far this year.
Jeff, anything else come to mind to you as far as why we're seeing this?
Yeah, I think, you know, some of it is the dynamics of lineups. We're seeing more left-handed hitters get at bats in the big leagues than ever before. I think it was somewhere around 40% of plate appearances were to left-handed hitters. We're seeing more platoon guys, right? Because more often than not, they're on the strong side of the platoon. I also think just generally, there is a bias toward, you know, left-handers with all things being equal. There's a little more deception there. We know that the velocity of a left-hander, when it is a little bit harder, plays up almost like a mile per hour or more. So it's maybe not all that different from a right-hander with good extension or that hides the ball well or that backspins it well. It's just, it's kind of a unique trait. Like, being a left-handed pitcher and starter that has good stuff is just kind of a unique trait. And I think that's some of the value in it. The other part of it is some of these guys are just really interesting athletes. Parker Messick isn't the biggest guy. I think he's listed at 6 feet. I think he's probably shorter than that based on meeting him at the prospect pad last year and talking with him for a little bit. Kind of like an unassuming body and just gets to really weird angles constantly and is able to throw strikes doing that. And I think you see like Conley Early, who's a guy that's kind of built up and added stuff to his arsenal, but always really always had kind of outlier feel for all of his secondaries, but particularly like the off-speed stuff. And you just kind of go through one by one and they all have very unique characteristics that I think allow them to have the sort of success, that a lot of these guys are having. And, you know, it would be interesting to see how like Noah Schultz and some of these other guys, Cade Anderson, we talked about earlier, how all of these guys kind of fit into the equation, because I think all of them do different things well from the left side, but it plays up a little bit more because of, you know, that unique angle that lefties just create generally.
I will just add kind of, I just looked up, thanks to Baseball Reference, kind of stats on this real quick. So right-handed hitters are hitting, have a 689 OPS, 238, 312, 377 against right-handed pitchers this year. Left-handers are hitting 248, 334, 415. So a 748. So much bigger, you know, much better, obviously, as you expect. Right-handed hitters have a 715 OPS against left-handed pitchers, which is still dramatically less than lefties versus righties. And then lefties have a 676, which is even worse than the right-handers versus righties against left-handed pitchers. But to kind of Jeff's point, right-handed pitchers are seeing left-handed batters 53% of the time. Left-handed pitchers are seeing right-handed batters 67% of the time. We've seen an emphasis in recent years on teams drafting left-handed hitting infielders. Like, you know, a lot of the great infielders will come up are these lefty hitting infielders, switch hitters. The Guardians basically don't draft right-handed hitters almost. Like, their hitters, they have lineups in the minor leagues where it's like, here's the right-handed hitter on it, and everyone else is a lefty or a switch hitter. Well, one thing with that is what's the antidote to that? Have a lot of lefties. And so, you know, so this is kind of fascinating to watch. to see kind of, okay, maybe this is this little extra edge. And again, the other part of it is that I love when you said that, Ian, like that Parker Messick, who's kind of, you know, not really known for his velocity, he's 30th percentile velocity, and he's 93. Like the other thing about this is what used to be the soft tossing lefty, and I'm going to just note, as I like to note on these, on the same scale, this isn't about radar guns picking up things at different levels. That used to be a guy who was 88, 89, 90. Those guys don't really exist pretty much anymore. Now it's guys who have 92, 93, 94 mile an hour fastballs, which is the same level of velocity that we were seeing from right-handed pitchers, starting pitchers as kind of average not that long ago. But again, if you're doing that as a lefty, and especially if you're getting to either take a guy out of the lineup who you really don't want to face because he's a lefty masher, but he struggles to hit righties, I mean lefties, or you'd have that guy, but it's like, yeah, but okay, this guy really hits right-handed pitchers, but he has more trouble with lefties. Getting your starter in there. Fascinating little tidbit. That was something that Ian kind of noted before we jumped into this. We hope you enjoyed that. We hope you enjoyed the latest edition of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast. So much more over at baseballamerica.com. As always, we encourage you to go check that out. And by the way, if you have thoughts, if you have comments, please leave them on our YouTube channel. Not only do we love reading them, not only do we like responding to a lot of them and all that, but at the same time, when you do that, it helps other people see the podcast as well. And I get that. Okay, I'll offer one disclaimer. I get it. If you're in a fantasy league, you're in a dynasty league, and you just claimed Franklin Arias because for some reason he wasn't already claimed or whatever because of this, I get it. You don't want to share it with any others in the league. But just think of all the other people out there who could benefit this, not just the people in your league. For Ian, for Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.